Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets.
Hi. My name is Matvey Yankelevich. I'm going to read... thank you, Anna, for including me in Real Poetique. And I'm going to read a little bit from this anthology called Oberyu, an anthology of Russian absurdism. Though it may not be absurdism, but it's something interesting. I'm going to read part 7 of Daniel Harm's kind of essay, I suppose, called The Saber, but it has a few poetic chunks. So here's number 7. If there are no longer any means to conquer the flood of meanings, one must leave the battle proudly and take up one's peaceful tasks. Peaceful is the task of building a house out of logs with the aid of an axe. I went out into the world deafened by thunder. A mountain of houses spread before me, but the saber, my singular flesh, whistling leftover of war, cleaves swallows from the roofs, unable to hack through a log. Shall I exchange my weapon or my task? Shall I slash my enemies or build my house? Or rip the lace from maid, from oak, and plunge my saber in their breast? I am a carpenter armed with a saber. I meet the house as though a foe. The house stands stricken through the center, bowing its horns to the floor. Here is my saber, my measure, my feather, my faither, my failure. And this is another piece by Daniel Harms, who I'm a book of whose work in my translation is coming out next fall on Overlook. This is Blue Notebook number 10. There lived a red-headed man who had no eyes or ears. He didn't have hair either, so he was called a redhead arbitrarily. He couldn't talk because he had no mouth. He had no nose either. He didn't even have arms or legs. He had no stomach. He had no back. He had no spine, and he had no innards at all. He didn't have anything. We don't even know whom we're talking about. It's better that we don't talk about him anymore. Blue Notebook number 16. Today I wrote nothing. Doesn't matter. This is the book, The Present Work, which is a long poem on Palm Press. I'm not going to read from it. It's really long. But if you want to read it, I have like 3 copies, so just talk to me. Buttons. Anna told me to pace myself on the beer, but... I tried. Buttons. This text is written on buttons so tightly sewn to each other that no one can read it. Clarify. This text is written on the inside side of many buttons, all of which are sewn together in a necklace of buttons so that you can't even see the text. In fact, the beaded and contiguous nature of these buttons makes it impossible to even know which side of each button is its inside side. In the necklace of buttons, sides don't matter. Every side touches is in contact. Even so, the text is written only on the inside side. The side which was once in contact with was touching the clothing people wore, the clothing of the people who once wore it, but now do not wear the clothing because it does not have buttons. During the war, all the buttons fell off. Those that didn't fall off were cut from the clothing of the people. No, the buttons no longer touch the clothing. Instead, they touch each other on all sides. Buttons have 2 sides and 2 sides only. At least these buttons. No one can read this text. It's on the buttons, and the buttons touch. And so there's no room for an eye to get in. They're in between the buttons. No, the buttonholes don't help either. They're stuffed with thread. They're the thread that keeps the buttons touching. These buttons are a sort of entertainment, you might say. Their holes are full of thread. Their sides touch. Not even imaginary characters can read the text. Not even a thought experiment. Boris can't read it even if I asked him to. Benita Canova can't read it, nor can Nietzsche, the ontological one, can't, and the hysterical one, too. The buttons are so close together, you can't even unbutton them. You can't even imagine them. These are real buttons. My friends can't read the buttons, and you, I don't even know my friends, because on one side, they are my friends, and on another, they're somebody else's friend, yours maybe, their own, definitely, imaginary, perhaps, yes. The buttons, I've never been so afraid of buttons. And I'm gonna read one more poem. He will die with pavement, he will not die with grands, bassoons, oboes, Beethoven, he will die of drinking bark brewed in a pot that did not agree with him, though its name was sweet, the last pinch of tea in the house that was not locked, never locked for no reason to be, of course, picking snot or summer fowl feather cooked with well water. Oh well, what well? Well, welly well, he will die like Gertrude Stein eating a pie she didn't, and he will anyway, because he is not she, and whatever is organic should not be growing. That way the growing can be predicted, and anyone who wanted that kind would have died already while swatting a fly, you know, that bothered him so. And you can't do that anymore. No, you can't die unless you never were alive. Yes, with songs, with 3-minute songs, or even just riffs not lasting even as long as a song in his head repeated, he will die simply with nothing special and go on. You can say it. He's dead and doesn't. So say whatever's on your mind. It's not pro this or pro that. Rather appropriately poetic, because then is that. And if you don't understand, then you are an ignoramus. I must say you are snob. All you can do is pick which nostril to pick from. So stuck. So naive, you pretend to be a child so that none will know that you are a child, of course, naive, nor then, nor that. Packed to the rafters with cement popping sidewalk chansonniers, your head contains a talk I had with the dead. Your face seems to have an expression on it, an expression that should wear a bonnet, you know, like Mother Goose, or better, the pilgrim that edited the Dickinson out of her. Your face should really be hanged. Get off me with that face of yours. You'd think you are a magazine. You are so bored at the coffee table. That's right. Did you come thinking I talk about someone who wasn't in the room, like the good gossip, the bonnet, the old goose? I've stripped it so that it's more bare. My seat is comfortable to me. Come table closer. Meet me halfway on this compromise we have here in between today and tonight. Blue, blue, blue. Oh, now you think you are funny. You are funny if you think that. Like the right sort of sneakers if you're having sex in them. You'd think you was born laughing. Scorn, shame, you actors, all of you pedants. I'm him. So since I'm dead, you can talk all you want. It's not that I can hear you. Oh, you too do talk. Don't you? A heart has no lines like a palm, and yet it's like you had yours in mine. Squeeze, squeeze, and you wheeze and whistle. Oh, how shall you die? A stack of books by your side. Oh, how shall you die? This coral monocle will break in your blood vessel, and you'll be carried out to sea by your tears, and each one holding up a shoe phone to cry closer to your ear, and we just wish you had cut your hair once more before you had to go, weirdo.
Anna, I can't see in the dark, but I think you're, there you are, Anna and Chris, for organizing this, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm going to read from this, it's a chapbook I made for Doozy Collective last year, and part of the deal was that we make our own chapbooks, and then we have to give them to everyone else in the collective, and I wanted more, so I bootlegged my own chapbook. And you can, there are a couple more if you're interested. It's called Insect Country A. A trail of anything Insects, hamburgers, bicycles, popsicles, miniature lightning bolts, road maps, anything, all of it, all lined up insidiously, all imagining the small of my back, envisioning it bare, exposed to the light, sunlight, moonlight, halogen, fluorescent, all of it, seeing it, wanting it, nearing, fighting for, quietly, no, silently, crowding my small and... Ladybug. I am looking for my friend who promised to meet me on this street at a time that's right about now, except we failed to specify exactly at which part of the block we would meet, and even then it should not be a problem because I know exactly what my friend looks like, and I'm not seeing her at all anywhere on the block. I ask around to the local shopkeepers, but they haven't seen her either, and I look around some more and I still don't see her, but fortunately everyone has cell phones, and so right then she calls and says to look behind me. And I do, and I still don't see her. And she says, look down. And I do, and I still can't find her. And she says she's under that pile of swarming ladybugs right there. And I am horrified. But she says she's having a good time and that I should come and join her. And I walk away, and that was the sad end of our friendship. Parade. Today is a unique holiday commemorated by a parade of black four-legged stools going down the closed-off street. All the neighborhood aunts come out to take a look, most of whom take a very critical stance. The cannibal has made his latest killing. He sits down with his fork and special knife, all excited about digging into the flesh, the chewy stomach, the long intestines. When he bites into an intestine, he is startled to find it stuffed with live, undigested ants and has no idea what to make of this new and bewildering situation. Girl talk. We are sitting around the table, eating and drinking and exchanging stories about flashers, gropers, underwear thieves, your general assortment of urban perverts. When I tell the story about the man who came up to me and opened up his bag and offered me one of a teeming million wiggling ants in his bag, the whole table goes silent, and I am reminded all over again how hard it is to get along with the women in this country. And I would love to read from that giant, beautiful, real poetic book. Did you mark it for me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. This is great. Okay. It's so... Okay, here we go. Sorry, I'm getting used to it. Okay, it's called... An ant in the mouth of Madonna behind locked doors. Is there, but can't prove it to anyone. Is small, is glistening and black, is determined, is hanging on, is at a loss for a good perch, is wet, is blown by the wind when she takes a breath, is happy, is uncertainly happy, is ardent, is devoted, warm and plenty, full of courage, is going to write a Moby Dick-length book about this upon returning, is unsure, is still looking to perch, is unable to see its own feet, is developing a relationship, its first adult relationship, is in a wet place or a hard place, is not strong enough to hang on, not even to the backs of her teeth, is hardly noticed, is tentative, is shy, is timid, is sweet. Oh, if only it could prove it, is waiting for its chance, is waiting for a big break, is going to show those folks back home, is feeling the slightest bit homesick, is determined to make it, is determined to go down in history, is determined to beat the odds, is casually hoping to make it into the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest time spent in Madonna's mouth, is an optimist at heart, is fearful at the moment when her breathing gets rough, is shaking, is having a once-in-a-lifetime experience, is, after all, an ant with a fairly short lifespan, is gay, is not gay, is female, is black, is uncertain, is nothing compared to the giant scale of all the people who surround her, is everything relative to the other organisms inside her mouth, is big, big-hearted, is open-minded, is sweet. Really, all it ever wants is for her to, oh, and then she comes, and the aunt is and isn't and is as it ever was. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Chip Cheek. I'm the editor-in-chief of ReDivider, and Chris told me to give a subtle reminder for people to speed it up, because we have 10 minutes left, and I'm a little stressed out. Hopefully you don't get kicked out of the place. Anyway, ReDivider is the literary journal of at Emerson College in Boston, and we have a big stack over there. Please come take some. They're on the house. I don't care. Just take them. And we also have we're running a contest here. It's the AWP Quickie. And we have cards here. If you have a poem or short shorts, you can write it on the back of the card, give it to us by the end of the book fair tomorrow, and we'll publish the winners. So we've got three readers that I'm going to introduce, and I'm sorry, my throat is going out. First is Dan Bull, who was born in Baltimore, Maryland in 1977. He has since lived in Pennsylvania, Virginia, Massachusetts, and Texas. His chapbook work won the 2006-7 Pavement Saw Chapbook Award. His current projects include a collaboration of pirate poems, which is awesome, paintings entitled Kings of the F***ing Sea, The Laser Show Project, which can be seen at www.thelasershowproject.blogspot.com or in the OK Mountain Reader, and a post-petroleum children's novel entitled Naomi and the Horse-Flavored T-Shirt. Awesome. He works for the Blanton Museum of Art in Austin, Texas. And secondly is Samson Starkweather, who was born in Pittsboro, North Carolina. He works as an editor of science textbooks. Some of his poems are recently published or forthcoming from Jubilat, Lit, Poetry Daily, Absent, New York Quarterly, Gargoyle, ReDivider, Asheville Poetry Review, Sync Review, Lumina, and were nominated for a 2006 Pushcart Prize. He lives in the woods. Kevin Wilson was born, raised, and still lives in Tennessee. His stories have appeared in Plowshares, One Story, Greensboro Review, New Stories from the South, 2005, and elsewhere. So please, let me welcome Dan Bowl.
Hi. I'm a little nervous. I have an artist book that I did with the guy that did the Kings of the Fucking Sea with me. And that's free, so you can just take it. It's free. No cost. If you want to give money to anybody for it, you can give it to Chris for the so-and-so reading, but I don't really care about that. But I do like the so-and-so reading. Sorry. Anyway, this is called Cube, or seven complete strangers of widely varying personality characteristics are involuntarily placed in an endless Kafkaesque maze containing deadly traps. Able to take only so much hip-hop and databases, I get some coffee and shoot the shit with the coworkers there. Times like this, I think of that movie Cube. The best, worst movie I've ever seen. It's about these people who wake up in a giant cube. Frantically, they run around the cube's identical rooms, discovering each other and getting bloodbathed by unforeseen traps set by an unseen boss. It's a test. If they work together, they live. They fall into the regular character types, the soldier, the clown, the babe. Only the autistic guy lives. He actually likes the work of not getting bloodbathed. Tomorrow, I'll be somebody's boss, but today I can confidently count on myself as someone I like. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks. That was awesome, by the way. All right, this is called selling. I work at a museum, like an art museum. I used to work at a children's museum, and like when people asked me what I did, I'd say that I found lost children, because that's what I did. But now I sell tickets, so this poem's called Selling Tickets. John Malkovich wore seersucker shorts and one sock. He paid from a wad as thick as a steak. There was the Queen of Egypt and her retinue of bodyguards, or Liberia, I can't remember. Once there was a woman dressed in a man's suit. Usually it's the other way. A man wearing a chiffon dress is dirty as a tablecloth. But this woman, a girl really, wore an Armani suit, alerting me to the disparity of our situations. She had the slightest wisp of mustache, yellow like a coffee stain on her porcelain face. I handed her an emission sticker like a wound, and she stuck it on her chest, right under the gallery cameras. Then she belonged. This is Artist in Residence. We've got an artist in residence here filling what the museum has titled the Workspace Gallery with staplers, pens, paper clips, and an elaborate gymnastic mobile. I don't know how to say that word anymore because I went to Mobile, Alabama once. Anyway, it's kind of fucked me up. So anyway, gallery with staplers, pens, paper clips, and an elaborate gymnastic mobile. No, mobile, sorry. Fuck. All right, I'm going to start over. How do I say it? All right. They dance around in the air. Sorry. He was in my wedding, by the way. They dance around in the air like a dream office, like that movie where Mickey Mouse makes the broom carry all the water for him. Michael, one of the tech guys, was standing in the atrium, and I asked him, how long has the artist worked today? 5 o'clock, he said, but he probably wants to work longer. And no doubt there's an artistic town somewhere where an artistic butcher slices artistic ham. Sorry, I killed that one. I think Chris killed that one. He doesn't eat meat. Anyway, is that it? Okay. This one's called Maybe I'll Come See You in New York, and this is dedicated to Sam Starkweather, who is going to read after me. Maybe I'll come see you in New York. If the world waits for nobody, why do I always feel I'm arriving to it, like the escalator cresting into the station, full of people staring up at the black sign that shuffled city names and departure times like a deck of cards? Everyone had a destination and a bag to drag. Watching them sway with anticipation, I was conscious of the distance between you and me. How the hell can I show you who I become when you're so far away? It's like looking through a train window at a parallel train. When it moves, I feel like I'm moving, but I'm going nowhere. That's it.
Hello, thank you guys. I'm going to be quick. I have three poems. Thanks for that poem, Dan. That gave me a chubby. The first two poems are what I call trans-contemporations, which I don't have time to explain, but they're like poems, but better. The first two are from Cesar Vallejo, 51, from Trilsa, a trans-contemporation of Vallejo. A lie. I was just kidding. That's all. No biggie. Besides, would you really want to know how much it hurts when someone you love dies? A lie. Just between us. It's cool. Keep it on the DL. Like when you played possum by the pool, pretending to pump water from your lungs. After I saw Batman, I thought that winged thing I saved in the net of the leaf skimmer might have been you. And me, who you saw cry when I couldn't kill the rooster you raised. And you, walking away when I didn't believe you could fly. A stalemate, you taught me, was in a game when neither player can kill the other's king. But I was just pretending to cry. So there. So now you know, it was all a lie. And if you want to keep on dying, feel free. Next time, I won't even watch you when you play. 75, from Trilsa. Bang, bang, you're all alive. God had a gun. It shot a flag with the word bang on it, which somehow seems to support intelligent design and all that rigmarole. How strange it is to be alive. Before I was dead, it was my favorite. Finally, we found the perfect way not to describe something. Life is like a box with Tom Hanks inside it. You float nothingly behind that hippocampus that, like a memory of letting go of lightning bugs into a mason jar, goes from a glow to the nadir of cold glass until pain is soothed away into the end of a prosthetic limb. When Andre Agassi said, "Image is everything," he could not have known he was making a commercial for God. Death, then, is the opposite of the image. Original death, trademarked. While a wave machine produces a perfect wave every time, according to SeaWorld's website, with what impunity does one stay dead? And when a crash of water causes nothing to happen, you are transformed and no longer afraid, believing you're still alive. Perceive the sixth string of what's no longer yours. Bang, bang, goes the old song. You're all alive, not having been dead before. We think we are alive since we exist now. We think we matter, when in fact we are antimatter, cardboard cutouts that stiffen at the firing range, casualties of the pop gun, orphans of the one word. And yet, the dead are not dead. They float on the ceilings of everything. They come back wearing earrings in their old age, like Ed Bradley. They sing 60 Minute Man. They die with a flag to their head. Bang, bang, you're all alive. And the last poem I'm going to read is not a transcontemporation. It's a regular poem, sorry. It's called The Dream, and it also has an interpretation. The Dream. There is an anchor rising. Some kind of flood has happened. The anchor is floating like a beautiful boat with the name of some woman we can only imagine painted on its belly. The anchor reminds me of a tattoo on a man's arm, which takes the shape of the man's skin as he grows older. A music that could only be made by multiple women is coming from somewhere I can't see. The anchor is slowly disappearing in the sky, like that black and white movie about the boy who loses his red balloon. The higher the anchor rises, the further I sink. My wings are soaking wet, and the harder I try to fly, the harder it is to keep my head above the water. Finally, I take a weird faith in the anchor and simply let myself fall. And it's not fear, but something else I feel as some dark beast comes towards me from below. Interpretation. This, of course, is not the poet's dream at all, but the dream of his uncle. But you can't blame the poet. He truly believes it is his dream. He was too young to remember his uncle telling him in the valley of the Grand Canyon. It is the dream he knows best, being that it is not his. It grows like a forest in his heart. He is heavy with it, a crucified swimmer. What the poet doesn't know is his uncle still keeps the dream like a faded photograph of a daughter he never had. That once he fell into the well and gave way to the water, he realized his body was heavier than his dream, and from then on learned to love the weight that made him drown. Thanks.
I'm going to go real quick. I just want to thank Shannon and Laura and Chip and everybody at ReDivider, one, for publishing one of my stories, and two, for asking me to read, and three, for talking to me today at the book fair when so many people pretended not to notice me when I waved at them. So I appreciate it. I write fiction. I think somebody fucked up and asked me to read, but I'm going to go real quick. Carried Away. Benny was walking his dog when the hawk came and took it away. Or maybe it was a falcon. It was a very large bird, whatever it was. And now it had his dog. "Hey," Benny said when the bird swept down and plucked the little dog from the sidewalk. The dog was too confused to even bark. "Hey," he said again. The hawk just kept flying higher and higher. "Hey," he said one more time, even though he knew that saying it again wasn't going to do anything. He had begged his parents for over a year to get this dog. His father did not think he was responsible enough. "You're 11 years old," his father told him. You can't even remember to wear your underwear, right?" Still, he was persistent, ceaseless, unwavering. He talked about dogs all the time, pasted pictures on his walls, barked in his sleep. So they gave him this little dog. It was purebred, papered, the best thing Benny had ever seen. He called it Chin Chin, and he agreed to every rule his parents made up. He would feed it, clean up after it, walk it every day. "This is it, Benny," his father said. "You got your dog, so I don't want to hear about any other things you want. No train sets, no karate lessons, no anything." It was fine with Benny. He just wanted this dog. Now Benny watched Chin Chin getting further and further away from him. The leash still hung from the dog's neck. It reminded Benny of the time he'd lost his grip on a kite at the park and it had floated away. Oh God, his dad was pissed about that. He felt so stupid that he hadn't held on to the leash. The dog was his responsibility. There were so many things that he had worried about. Cars, other bigger dogs, other bigger kids, his father. He had never, even in his worst nightmares, imagined that a giant winged thing would carry his dog away from him. The hawk and the dog were gone now, out of sight. Benny still couldn't move. The world was mean and unfair in the strangest ways. He knew that his father would not get him another dog. He now realized that his father might not even believe his story about the hawk. He did not want to go home. He thought about the place that the hawk was taking his dog, somewhere far, far from the spot on the sidewalk, and he wished more than anything that he could go with them. Thank you.